IVM. Cartons in 127 trucks traveled all the way from Lucknow to the Bandra Kurla office of SEBI in Mumbai in September 2012. If the papers stacked up in a pile, it would be 3,800 meters tall or 52 times the size of the Qutub Minar. What was going on? Hello and welcome. My name is Priya Mirza and this podcast is The Longest Constitution. And we talk about the Constitution. It is true. We are looking at the judiciary, restrictions on our fundamental right to expression, and of course, the great Aadhaar that violates our privacy in our everyday lives. Let's get going with our first story today. The year is 2011, and the Sahara Group, a billion-dollar company set up by Subrata Roy, with its headquarters in Lucknow, was being investigated by the Security and Exchange Board of India, that's SEBI. And SEBI was investigating and Subrata Roy was trying to dodge the demand to refund investors. All the money they had collected by selling optionally fully convertible debentures or OFCD. I have no idea what that is, so don't ask me. But basically, Sahara violated market regulatory norms by raising money through debentures from the public in the guise of private placements. Faking it. Fakers. And then during these investigations, a TV news channel flashed details about the emails and correspondence between Sahara and SEBI. Did this affect Sahara's prospect of a fair trial? So, by the way, we have seen how Sahara, Reliance and other powerful corporations use prior injunctions on the ground of defamation to prevent the publication of a book about them. And previously, Sahara had done just that by filing an injunction against the impeccably researched book by Tanul Bandyopadhyay, Sahara, The Untold Story. So would information about this correspondence affect this powerful corporation's right to a fair trial? Okay, now, on to the collegium of the Supreme Court. We looked at this in the last episode and it's time to do a little unpacking. Let's open the suitcase. The collegium isn't mentioned in the constitution, but was an invention in the second judges case of 1993. And the collegium basically was that the five senior most judges of the Supreme Court would appoint the other guys, and they are mostly guys, of the higher judiciary. Basically, judges appointing judges. Now, why is that important? Because for the first time in India's constitutional history, the Supreme Court of India asserted its primacy over the executive and its power to control its own composition. But the question is, how do they do it? And that, by the way, has been described as one of the best kept secrets in the country. But hold on, this powerful organ of the government chose to remain silent in one of the most contentious matters, Aadhaar. So in 2012, when Aadhaar was challenged, an RBI report identified the CIDR, that's the Central Information Data Repository, as a single target for internal, external, foreign attacks. To quote, thanks to Aadhaar, for the first time in the history of India, there is now a readily available single target for cyber criminals as well as India's enemies. How convenient. Secondly, as Kapil Sibal pointed out, the data collecting machines, those things we look into, press our fingers into, are American, dude, American. YL1 Identity Solutions and Morpho SAS own those machines and software. And on account of that, they cannot be independently audited because it is covered by intellectual property law. So we gave an American company the proprietary right to collect our biometric data. And we have no way of knowing what was done and can be done to it. Nonetheless, in 2016, Parliament passed the Aadhaar as a money bill, giving it a statutory status and legalizing the illegal. And the Supreme Court merely sat silently between 2012 and 2017 for 5 long years. Our next story today is to do with the beautification of New Delhi, aided again by the Supreme Court. As New Delhi was beautifying itself, Justice Kirpal of the Supreme Court in Almithra versus Union of India 2000, and we looked at this in the previous episode, said, slums are responsible for pollution in Delhi, and he ruled out the possibility of relocation. This is what he said. Rewarding an encroacher on public land with free alternative site is like giving a reward to a pickpocket. And with that, the urban poor were treated like petty criminals, like a pickpocket. And following the pickpocket remark of the Supreme Court, the Delhi High Court received lots of PILs filed by middle-class RWAs to remove encroachments on public land in their neighborhoods. Now, a couple of things here. This was a turning point. Because the government's failure to provide things like public toilets for slum dwellers was to be solved by removing the slum itself and not by making the government provide those facilities. And labeling them as encroachers solved the problem. Because since they're encroachers, they're unauthorized, and encroachers are a nuisance and they have no legal right. In 2002, there were 62 such cases and had reached such a scale that a high court bench was constituted that heard the combined petitions. And a judgment called the Pitampura judgment was delivered. The welfare of the residents of these RWA colonies is also in the realm of public interest, which cannot be overlooked. After all, these residential colonies were developed first. The slums have been created afterwards, which is the cause of nuisance, brooding, ground of so many ills. The welfare, health, maintenance of law and order, safety and sanitation of these residents cannot be sacrificed, and their right under Article 21 is violated in the name of social justice to the slum dwellers. Whoa. So a little bit of Delhi's history here. According to the Delhi Development Act, that's DDA, DDA was granted monopoly control over the acquisition, development and disposal of all urban land. And this defined land in Delhi as public and was arguably the largest land nationalization program in the history of urban India. But most importantly, the Delhi Master Plan entitled the poorest income classes, and hear this out, to 25% of residential units in the city. But following the Pitampura judgment, the Supreme Court, rather than being a court, became, as Anuj Bhuvania calls it, a slum demolition machine. Back to the Sahara case. In the Sahara versus Sebi case 2012, the Supreme Court was asked to elaborate what reporting on subjudice matters really entailed. And this was rather huge because the number of investors who had been cheated was 30 million. And that would certainly qualify as a question of public interest and translate into people's right to know about market manipulations and powerful corporations. So the question was, would merely reporting a matter qualify as contempt of court? And the court clarified that, and I quote, "It is well settled that it is inappropriate for comments to be made publicly in the media or on cases which are sub judice. However, such orders have to be passed only in cases in which there is real and substantial risk of prejudice to fairness of the trial or to the proper administration of justice." Which basically meant, yes, the media can in fact be restricted from reporting on matters. So rather than upholding the media's right to report freely, it left the door open for the courts to effectively create a gag writ. Meanwhile, interestingly, the United States has rejected these sweeping contempt powers as unconstitutional, and the press has a constitutional right to freedom of expression. And England, which created the offense in the first place that India incorporated into its law, stopped prosecuting people for it in 1931 and formally abolished it in 2013. So today's takeaways are, where these millions of slum-dwelling people would go once evicted from their homes and why they were there in the first place was of no concern to the court. But more was to come. And that was the Commonwealth Games New Delhi hosted in 2010. In the Sahara case, the court clarified that in certain matters, the media could be delayed from reporting matters, in which case the media could effectively be gagged. And finally, the Supreme Court stood by and watched Aadhaar go from illegal to legal. That's all for today, gentle listeners. If you have questions or comments, please send them in via email. That's thelongestconstitution@gmail.com. You can also rate my podcast at Spotify and drop a review at Apple Podcasts, and can also reach out to me on Twitter where I am at FundamentallyP or on Instagram, The Longest Constitution. Until next time, this is me, Priya Mirza, signing out.